Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, that's 12a, at the Mishnah towards the bottom of the page. It's the fifth wide line. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. Okay, our second Mishnah of this chapter is fundamentally similar to the first Mishnah. So we're just going to review the first Mishnah and then see how it flows into the second Mishnah. The first Mishnah says that the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is that if a person's olives are ready for pressing before the holiday, and for some reason that's out of his control, he was unable to press them before the holiday, and if he doesn't press them until after the holiday, he's going to suffer a loss, then he can do the first pressing on Chol HaMoed, but that's all. That's the only amount that he can do. And that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Now, there is a discussion there. Well, we'll come back to that in a second. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that in the same situation, he can do more than just the first pressing. He can press them fully the way he would if it was not Chol HaMoed. So Rabbi Yossi is much more lenient than Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda requires a shinui of some kind, either a change in the way that he presses them or not to press them completely. And Rabbi Yossi says he can press them all the way until the completion, including sealing up the barrel, kidarko, in the same way that he would usually do it. There is a discussion as to whether or not the Mishnah is only talking about what you can and can't do related to olives on Chol HaMoed, or whether it's also talking about the same issue related to a person who's mourning, in which case, in mourning, an avel. In which case, we concluded that he cannot do these activities, according to everybody, if he is an avel, but he may be able to hire someone to do it on his behalf. So that's the first Mishnah, which deals with olives. This Mishnah is fundamentally similar, but instead it's dealing with wine. And the Gemara will ask, why do we need to have both? And we'll explain in a second. The only other thing to notice is that here we switch the two. In other words, in the first Mishnah we do Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Yossi. So the stringent opinion and then the lenient opinion. And here we do Rabbi Yossi and then Rabbi Yehuda, the lenient opinion and then the stringent opinion. So it says in our Mishnah, fifth wide line, V'chein, and similarly to our previous Mishnah about olives, Mishahaya yeno betoch habor, if someone has wine that is pressed in the pit, so there is a difference between the gat and the bor. The gat is the place where you press the olives or the wine, and the bor is where the liquid leaks into. So once it leaks into the bor, it's ready to be collected and sealed. So he has it in the bor before the holiday, and he wanted to finish the job, but he wasn't able to because v'iru evel, either he became a mourner before the festival, according to that reading, o ones, or something else happened that was out of his control, o shehit uhu, or the laborers who were supposed to come do it didn't show up and they misled him. So zolef v'gomer v'gaf kedarko, he can finish the production of the wine. He can draw out the wine, whatever zolef means exactly, and finish clarifying it and collecting it and then putting it into a barrel and sealing the barrel. He's allowed to do all of those things. Again, the other way of reading it is that the avel part is a separate halacha about the laws of mourning, and the other parts are about Chol HaMoed. Anyway, Divrei Rabbi Yossi, that's Rabbi Yossi, who says that you can do the job the way you would ordinarily do it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oseh lo limudim, let him make boards, bishvil shelo yachmit, so that the wine will not spoil. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda wants to make a shinui, or not allow him to finish it. He wants him to understand that it's still Chol HaMoed, but he doesn't want him to have a loss. So instead of collecting the wine from the pit and putting it into barrels and sealing it, he says, just cover it over in a way that it won't spoil, and then you'll finish the job after Yontif. It's fundamentally similar machloket to the previous Mishnah. Gemara says, Utsricha, why I need both cases. Di'i ashma inen kamaita. If we mentioned the first case, that is the case of the olives, Behahi, in that case, Ka'ama Rabbi Yossi is lenient to allow you to finish pressing the olives. Mishum de Mishcha, because oil, Nafish Psedai, the amount that you will lose from oil is a lot. You know, Rashi says that this is because oil is much more expensive, but this is going to depend on local situations and economies. The Rashash says differently, that oil spoils much easier. So since the oil spoils much easier, you have to be more careful with it. there's more likely to have a loss if you don't deal with it. Aval chamra, but wine, the lo nafish pseide, where you're not likely to have as much of a loss, ema, I might say, modu leila Rabbi Yehuda. He would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that you shouldn't finish the process, that you should make a shinui and wait till after the festival. In other words, there is a question of relative loss. What is the line between a sufficient enough loss to do things according to Rabbi Yossi, where you push off the restrictions of Chol HaMoed and you can do your work the way you want to do it, or a not a significant loss, where perhaps Rabbi Yossi would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that you should make a shinui. However, this Mishnah comes to teach us that even in wine, which is a smaller amount of loss, once Rabbi Yossi thinks you're allowed to do it, he lets you do it the way that you would ordinarily do it. The Iashma'in and Batraita, if we had only mentioned the second case, the latter case, Behahi, in that one, Ka'ama Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that you had to make limudim, you had to cover it over and you couldn't take the wine out. Aval Bahach, but in the other case of the olives, Eima Modir Rabbi Yossi, maybe he would agree to Rabbi Yossi, since it's such a significant loss, maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you could finish the process of pressing the olives completely, just as you would during the week. Tzricha, therefore, I need both cases to show you that since there is a slight difference between the two cases and how much loss there is, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi both stay consistent with their principles. Rabbi Yossi, you can do things ordinarily. Rabbi Yehuda, you have to do them with a shinui. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Abba, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Abba says, Man Tana, who is the Tana, who is the Mishnaic authority, who says, Shinui b'moed b'davar ha'aved, that when you have a loss, a davar ha'aved, something that you're, if you don't do it on Chol HaMoed, you're going to suffer a financial loss, but when you do it, you should do it with a shinui. Who is the person who does that? Deloka Rabbi Yossi. It is not Rabbi Yossi. In other words, I don't know why he doesn't say it's Rabbi Yehuda, but it is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi does not think you have to do a shinui. Once you're allowed to do it, that is, it's a loss, you do it in your ordinary way. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. And this seems to be the case. In other places in Shas, we have in Eruvin, Mem Vav Amud Aleph, 46a, we have this opinion that anytime there is a machloket between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, generally speaking, we follow Rabbi Yossi. So we are lenient here and say that once you're allowed to do something in Chol HaMoed, you can do it in your normal way. Anyway, that is Rabbi Yosef's opinion. Be'au Mine, Me Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, they asked the question, the students asked the question from Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Mahu Lamesha Chavita, Deshichra b'chula d'mo'ada. What is the law regarding lemesha? Lemesha apparently is the same word as laguf, to stop up. That is to, once you have the wine in the barrel, you create some kind of a plug on the hole of the barrel and you seal it up. Lemesha chavita deshichra, to seal up a barrel of beer on Chol HaMoed. Amar lehu, he said to them, Rav Nachman Yitzchak said to them, Sinai amar halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. The one who is Sinai said the halachas like Rabbi Yossi. Now, this is referring to our immediately previous comment that Rav Yosef said the halachas like Rabbi Yossi. So Rav Yosef had a nickname. His nickname was called, he was called Sinai. This is mentioned, this sugya is mentioned in Brachot, Samach Dal and Amud Aleph, and in Horiot, in Yud Dalid Amud Aleph, in which Rav Yosef is always called Sinai, and Rabba, his colleague and interlocutor, was called an Oker Harim. So they're both had nicknames related to mountains. It's a little, not 100% clear what it means, but Rabbi Yosef had a comprehensive knowledge of all the Mishnahs and the Braitas. So in other words, he knew all of the material from Sinai. So he was a person who had comprehensive knowledge. It could also mean that he was a traditionalist, that he didn't want to change things, that he wanted to always find a Mishnah that established the case that was at hand. So in that case, perhaps he was a little more conservative, small c. Rab, on the other hand, was called an Oker Harim, an uprooter of mountains, and that means that he was sort of creative, or his skills were not so much in remembering every Mishnah and Braita, but in analysis, comparing things, and perhaps coming up with innovative and novel conclusions. So the two of them are considered two types of sages. But Rav Yosef's nickname was Sinai. So he says, Sinai said, the halacha is like Rav Yosef. But the Gemara has a problem. In other words, you should be allowed. But he says, Imor de Amar Rav Yosef b'chamra. But the statement of Rabbi Yossi says that you can seal up a barrel of wine. B'shikra mi amar. But it doesn't say anything about beer. So maybe beer and wine are different than each other. Chamra taimamai. So what's the reason why you're allowed to seal up a barrel of wine? Mishum denafish pside. Because it is a significant loss. Shichranami isbe pside. But beer also has a loss. Now again, we have a situation here of relative losses. Compared to oil, wine is a less significant loss than oil. But compared to beer, wine is a more significant loss. So we have to, you know, compare whether or not the wine and the beer are similar losses. But here we're arguing that they are similar losses. The Amar Abaye, for Abaye says, Amra li aim, my mommy said to me. Now Abaye is, according to Rashi and according to the Gemara, Abaye's mother died in childbirth, so he never knew his mother, but he had a nursemaid that he was especially close with, and he called her mother. So he says, my mother said to me, Barshit save vishaya, a barrel of beer that has 6 se'ah in it, so a measure of 6 se'ah, vishaye, and it is sealed, is better mi bar tamne velo shaya, from a barrel of beer that has 8 se'ah in it and is not sealed. In other words, I'd rather have less beer that's properly packaged than more beer that's improperly packaged. At the end of the day, the smaller amount that's more has better quality control will be better. So in that case, we see that that not sealing the beer causes a loss, and therefore it should be permitted under the same rubric as what Rabbi Yossi said, that you can seal up a barrel of wine. However, now we have a teaching that says that it's not always so easy to compare things in Hilchos Chol HaMoed. This is a very fundamental piece, in my opinion. It's hard to understand, but it's important to realizing why the laws of Yontif and Chol HaMoed are so complicated, especially Chol HaMoed. Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya. Rav Chama Bar Gurya said, Amar Rav, in the name of Rav, Hilchot Moed ki Hilchot Kutim. The laws of Chol HaMoed are like the laws of the Kutim. Now, we're going to try the halacha, in halacha. We're going to try to understand what this means. The Gemara is going to give an explanation in a second, but just to explain. So we understand what the laws of Chol HaMoed are and what's complicated about them. What's complicated about them is the Torah says very clearly what's supposed to happen on the first day and the last day. Those days are Yontif days, but it is much less clear from a Torah perspective what you are and aren't allowed to do in the intermediate days. And it's also unclear what exactly the rabbis established for the intermediate days. It sometimes it seems like a judgment call. So the laws of Chol HaMoed are fundamentally ambiguous in some ways. And the laws of the Kutim are the same way. The Kutim were a group of non-Jews who converted en masse to Judaism. And it's a whole story for another time. But they generated their own culture. And as Jewish sectarians, a group of Jews who had their own culture, there were some areas of halacha that they were very religious about, they were very firm about, and there were some areas that they weren't. And they kind of tracked together. So in some ways, their halachic practice matched that of other Jews. And in fact, they were extremely religious about those. Sometimes they were more machmir than the other Jews. But in other areas, they just didn't hold by those halachot at all. So it's as if, like, in some areas of halacha, they were holding by them, and in some, they just didn't do them at all. And because of this, the rabbis had an ambiguous relationship to them. You couldn't always trust that a kuti was religious, because only in some areas of law were they religious and others they weren't. So there were certain laws about how you dealt with kutim depending on which areas of halacha they were careful about and which they weren't. So Gemara asks, L'mai hilchasa, what does this mean? What's the halacha? Amar of Daniel Bar Katina, and there are different versions of exactly what of who said this. The Rif says Rav Katina. Lomar, this is to say, Shehein Akurot, they are barren, the Ein Lemedot Zu Mizu, and you cannot learn one from the other. So there's two statements here, barren and you can't learn one from the other. It's unclear if those things are one thing together or if they're two separate items. So let me suggest that there are three possible interpretations of what it means that you can't learn from the laws of Moed and the laws of Kutim. One explanation, and this is the first explanation brought in the Kitvei Yad, the manuscript of Rashi, is that you can't extrapolate within the laws of Chol HaMoed. So it's easy to understand within the Kutim. Within the Kutim, we know that there were some areas where they were religious and some areas where they were not religious. So that depended on the reality. It didn't always necessarily make sense. There wasn't necessarily a logical explanation for why they were religious in one area and not in another area. But that was the Mitziyut, that was the reality. So there were laws that were dependent on a specific reality. You couldn't necessarily extrapolate from one law related to the Kutim to another law because it was dependent on an external reality, not on an internal logic. So the same thing might apply to Hilchot Moed. Just because we allow one thing related to the laws of Moed in one area doesn't mean that something similar would be allowed in another area. There are different reasons for why things are permitted or forbidden on Chol HaMoed that don't necessarily track with each other. And this obviously would be confusing because then you can't create an internal logic. You just have to know what the rules are. The second explanation, the Rashi says, is that you can't extrapolate to other laws. This is what it means that they're barren. They're barren in the sense they have no children. You cannot derive laws from Chol HaMoed and say, because this is permitted in the laws of Chol HaMoed, in some other area of halacha, in tefillah or Shabbos or something else, I'm going to derive the same principle and apply it there. The laws of Chol HaMoed are an entity unto themselves. They're an island unto themselves, and they can't be extrapolated to other laws in the Torah. And the third possibility is that there's difficulty in establishing priorities. The fact that they are akurot means that they stand by themselves, that different authorities and at different places and different situations, the priorities were established in different ways, and therefore it doesn't always come out the same because it's unclear how to identify what is the most important thing in the law, whereas in many other areas of halacha, we know what's most important and what's less important. Now, it's possible that these are three different interpretations of the meaning, or it's possible that akurot means one, that you can't go to other areas of halacha, and ein lemedo zumizu means that you can't extrapolate internally, or they could mean the same thing, and it's three different halachot. In any case, it means that the laws of Chol HaMoed are, along with the laws of Kutim, are unique in that they stand alone and are somehow separated from the rest of the Torah in being difficult to apply logic to. Okay, the Amar Shmuel, here's an example. Shmuel says, Zoftin Kuzta, you may seal up with pitch a Kuzta, which is a large barrel. I think a Kuzta is a large barrel. I forget exactly which one it is. Oh, no, sorry, it's a small barrel. It's a jug. The kuzta is a jug. So he says, zoftin kuzta, you may seal up the jug. Ve'ein zoftin chavita, but you may not seal up the large barrel. Now, a jug and a large barrel are very similar, and the action of sealing them is exactly the same. So what's the difference between them? On the other hand, Rav Dimi min Naharda, Amar Rav Dimi from Naharda said, Zoftin Chavita, you can fill up with pitch the large barrel, ve'ein Zoftin Kuzta, but you can't seal up the small barrel. So these two rabbis disagreed with each other. Mar Chayesh Lepseda, what's the reason? One of them was concerned about loss. That was his prioritization in the laws of Hilchos Moed was loss. So when you're sealing up a large barrel, you're preventing loss. Therefore, would be allowed. Umar chayish latircha. But the first opinion, so that's the opinion of Rav Dimi, is that you can seal up the large barrel because it's a large loss, but the small barrel is not such a big loss, so you can't do it. Umar, but the other one, chayish latircha, he cares about tircha. It's much harder to seal up a large barrel, so therefore it's forbidden, but it's much easier to seal up a smaller jug. So this goes according to the third interpretation that I gave, which is it's hard to know how to apply the priorities in the halacha. Do we prioritize tircha? Do we prioritize pseda? Perhaps it's unclear how we apply those, and each rabbi in each town was able to determine themselves. Halacha l'maisa, we paskin l'kula for both of them, that you're allowed to do both. But this is an example of showing how difficult it is to extrapolate logically in the laws of Moed. Now, in the Yerushalmi, it brings the same machloket, but it brings it as two opinions of Shmuel. And if you look at it that way, then it is a whole different ball of wax. Rather than saying that two rabbis had different prioritizations, we would say that two students had different opinions of what Shmuel said, or that there's some confusion about which is the proper prioritization, but if it only belongs to one person, it might be a different way of looking at it. Okay, now, Amar Abaye, our last teaching is Abaye, and instead of comparing the laws of Chol HaMoed to the laws of Kutim, he's going to compare it to the laws of Shabbos, which seems like a much more traditional way of saying that the laws of Moed are similar to the rest of Halacha, but perhaps he only means to compare it in a micro way. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, last line, Naktinan Hilchot Moed, we understand or we include the laws of Moed, ki Hilchot Shabbat, that are like Shabbat. They're like the laws of Shabbat. In what way? Top of Yud Bet Amud Bet. Yesh Mehen Patur Aval Asr, there are some mitzvot in Chol HaMoed that you're not supposed to do them lichatchila, ab initio, but if you do them, there's no punishment. V'yesh mehen mutar and lichatchila, and there are some that are permitted lichatchila. So just as we have this in Shabbos, there are some things that you're allowed to do lichatchila, and then there are some things you're not supposed to do, but if you do them, you haven't transgressed the Torah prohibition. So the same thing is true in the laws of Chol HaMoed. Now, there are also a couple of different ways of looking at this. One explanation of this could be that we're talking here specifically about the Derabanan connection to the Doraita, meaning both the laws of Shabbat and the laws of Chol HaMoed we're saying are rooted in the Torah. However, the rabbis added many additions to the laws of Shabbat, and the rabbis had to decide which things were forbidden and permitted on Chol HaMoed. And since the permission was given to the rabbis in both of those situations, they devised these two structures, rabbinic structures, one where we say it's perfectly fine for you to do this, it's mutar l'chatchila, and a second structure where it's a bad idea to do it, we don't want you to do it, so rabbinically it's forbidden. But if you do it, it doesn't rise to the level of onesh, you don't get punished for it, it's just that you're not supposed to do it. So if you did do it, b'dieved, it's no harm, no foul. And in other words, though, the laws of Chol HaMoed are not similar to Shabbos in any other way, other than in this way, in which the way the rabbis extended it from its Doraita prohibition. Okay, we'll stop there at the top of the amud, continue on our next recording, have a wonderful day.